Hi, this is Clyde Yancey here at the 2017 American Heart Association Annual Scientific Sessions. I am Chief of Cardiology and Professor of Medicine at Northwestern University in Chicago, and I'm joined today by my very good friend and colleague, Pat O'Gare, from the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. And Pat and I are going to share with you our perspectives, our takeaways about what we think may be the most important topic that's been discussed here at the AHA annual meeting, and that's the new hypertension guidelines, Pat. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
We finally got them.
I think so. Yeah, it's been terrific in terms of the release around this particular meeting and the emphasis that the Heart Association has played with respect to this very important public health problem.
You know, I totally agree. And to put it in context, I was struck when I realized that it's been over a decade since we had a clear directive from any governing organization of substantial size, at least, to say this is how we believe you should approach hypertension. And you and I know there's been a ton of new information that's come forward in the last decade, yet we didn't provide guidance, and now we have that guidance.
Absolutely. I think there's been some confusion and a bit of consternation in the community about targets and how it is we should think about blood pressure in the context of overall cardiovascular risk. I know you're excited about that.
No, I'm very excited about that, and you and I really are contemporaries, and you will remember, as do I, that when we were first introduced to the concept of treating hypertension, the hypertensive patient was at 160 over 100.
Right.
And then we were trying to treat them to perhaps less than 140 over 90 or right at 140 over 90. We didn't understand a lot about risk. We didn't understand a lot about comorbidities. We didn't have drugs with as much finesse as we have now. And we've seen the needle move so much further forward. So we've been able to really revisit hypertension in several important ways. So let's talk about some of the things that they're doing differently. So the first is making the diagnosis. What is hypertension with these new guidelines?
Right. I think that the new guidelines are really helpful with respect to reminding us how to measure blood pressure.
Correct.
And how to make an initial diagnosis of hypertension, not to rely on a single number, but actually a sampling of numbers, preferably outside of an office situation, and preferably never assessed by a physician, because, as you know, physician blood pressure measurements are typically higher than those taken by nurses or pharmacists or other advanced practice providers. And I think that the guidelines are very clear with respect to the benefit of both home blood pressure assessment as well as ambulatory blood pressure monitoring, especially among that very large population of patients we treat with white coat effect,
right,
or when you're suspicious, right, of masked hypertension. And I think that our community hasn't really appreciated masked hypertension for at least the period of time that you and I have been practicing.
No, I agree. And to be very clear, the guidelines are explicit. Greater than two separate measurements on greater than two separate occasions. And so let's take the ambiguity out of this, take the guessing game out,
right,
and make certain that hypertension is present. So I think that's the first thing that was terrific. The next thing that's terrific is that they've come forward with the risk-based concept,
right,
which we've never really appreciated before in hypertension. And I think that's wonderful because it aligns so nicely with our approach to dyslipidemia now. And what we're doing is getting away from see a number, treat a number,
right,
to see a number and have a conversation and discuss risk. I have to think that you agree with me.
Absolutely. I applaud the chairs as well as the writing committee members for framing the issue about hypertension within the context of a broader assessment of risk, secondary prevention, primary prevention, low risk, high risk, and the sorts of things, as you point out, that we are now applying to the treatment of hyperlipidemia. It's very, very consistent.
And as you outline, it's almost a certain amount of elegance in the way this is done. And so for primary prevention purposes, if your risk for an event is greater than 10% over 10 years, now at a threshold of 130 over 80 or greater, we believe that we start with lifestyle changes and we institute medical therapy if we can't get to goal. And we do that over a short number of months. But if you already have established cardiovascular disease, we're talking secondary prevention, and we suggest,
right,
you start therapy right now. I just think it's really elegant the way that we've brought risk into it, primary and secondary prevention. The other big part of this that is really going to be a challenge, frankly, is the lifestyle modification.
Right.
There's such a big emphasis on it for obvious reasons. What do you think about the success we'll have with the lifestyle modification?
Well, I think it remains to be seen, but I think it is our number one priority at this point. And I also am very much appreciative of the way the guidelines were not necessarily focused exclusively on drug therapy for hypertension.
Right.
And they remind us about the basics of lifestyle intervention and provide an evidence base on top of which we can actually take home some solid messages. And as a practitioner, I find it very easy to remember the major principles that are provided in this guideline, ranging from a conversation with patients about their weight, their level of physical activity, whether they're actually doing other things that are counterproductive with respect to blood pressure control, whether it's alcohol related, for example, or whether it's taking too much in the way of ibuprofen for aches and pains. And an emphasis on lifestyle measures as a foundation for treatment cannot be overemphasized.
No, I agree, and I particularly like what was done with diet. Once again, we emphasize that low sodium really is the way to go. I know there's a lot of dialogue about sodium, but the tenets of low sodium diet's effect on health remain, even though there are some discussions that are ongoing. But I also thought it was novel that the higher potassium intake was brought into the discussion.
Right.
That seemed to be very reasonable. Now, two other things that I think we should emphasize as highlights. One is, now that we've made the diagnosis and had the conversation and have determined that either it's for secondary prevention or the risk assessment puts you in a mode of primary prevention, we now have a new target of therapy. And I think that merits some conversation.
I think so. I think so. It seems to me the take-home message from the guideline is lower is better.
Right.
And I think, obviously, predicated to a fairly substantial degree on the results of the SPRINT trial that were much more impressive, I think, than most of us had anticipated. But not only would lower necessarily be better, I do think that there is some discussion about the potential risk of overly treating hypertension in vulnerable populations.
Right.
I think we have to be careful to individualize the approach based on patient age, frailty, comorbidities, and the other kinds of things that we deal with when managing patients with hypertension, so many of whom have other cardiovascular, renal, or central nervous system comorbidities.
No, I think that really will be the challenge, trying to allow all of us as practitioners to feel comfortable with, yes, there are new targets, but to not retreat away from good clinical judgment. There will be those patients where going to 130 is going to be problematic. But there also will be those patients where going to 130 will really prevent cardiovascular disease and stroke, and we shouldn't overlook that opportunity. I'm really thrilled that the new guideline is here. What kind of closing sentiments do you want to express to our
Well, I think we have to be very appreciative of the work that this committee did in bringing forward something that the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute asked the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology to do back in 2013. The committee took their time, sifted through the information. I think that they have adopted a new approach to formatting guidelines that should make it a bit more user-friendly. But I come away with this with a much more a much broader appreciation for hypertension in the context of overall risk, the lifestyle measures that would be important, drug therapies, lower is better. And I think we've flattened the target for blood pressure achievement around 130 over 80, except in very unusual circumstances, much easier for clinicians to remember. So there's no longer this gradation or bifurcation dependent on age with which I think our community struggled over the last few years.
And I think you bring up another good point that merits emphasis. You and I have been involved in generating guidelines for many years, and part of our vulnerability has been in implementation. And I'm very pleased to know that there are partnerships that have been created with the American Medical Association, for example, that there will be a public health campaign, that there will be consumer-facing messaging, that there is a really good faith opportunity for these guidelines to become inculcated in the way that we, and as a practice community, think, but also the way as we as a population understand what it is we need to do to have better health going forward. So, like you, I think they hit it almost on every facet. The information is incontrovertible. The clarity of the statement cannot be debated. The implementation plan is present, something that's been missing many, many times before. Mm-hmm. And the potential benefit is there. So I'm delighted that we both have enthusiasm
Absolutely.
About these guidelines.
Right.
I hope that you, those of you that are listening, will take a look at the guidelines and will appreciate why Dr. O'Gara and I are so thrilled to see this statement come forward. This may be one of the most important cardiovascular news stories of 2017 because of its potential to save lives and allow people to be healthier and free of the burden of heart disease and stroke. And might I add, treating hypertension reduces the burden of heart failure, which particularly makes me a happy man.
Right.
Thanks, Beth.
All right.
Great
thanks,
talking
Clyde.
To you.
Yeah.